You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from binging, emotional eating, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in with questions, the number here is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is bothering you, because the solution to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the solution is not yet another diet. The key to change is focusing on what's eating at you and what is weighing on you. So give me a call and let's find a way to banish binging for good. And that brings me to my topic today, which is a common misconception, which is this. That if you struggle with binge eating disorder, it's going to be a lifelong battle. How depressing is that? How awful would that be? That is my cue to you that no, it does not have to be a lifelong battle. So I'll never forget the time that Kara, not her real name, Kara came into my office. She was feeling really hopeless when she first consulted me about her terrible relationship with food, which up until that point had been lifelong. She actually couldn't remember a time when she wasn't struggling with food. She couldn't remember a time when she didn't wake up thinking, I'm going to be good today. And she didn't go to bed thinking, okay, I'm going to be good tomorrow. Today was terrible, but I'm going to be good tomorrow. Her whole life was about being good with food and hating on herself when she felt she was bad or when she thought she had failed. So she told me that things had been so terrible for so long that all she thought about morning, day, and night was what she was eating, what calories she had, carbs she had, fat grams she had, what she was going to eat tomorrow, what she wasn't going to eat tomorrow. It had so taken over her life that she told me she didn't think that she would be one of my success stories. She said, I'm sorry, I'm going to break your streak of success. She told me she didn't think that she was going to be one of my success stories. 12 weeks later, 3 months later, she said, thank you, Dr. Nina, for existing. Thank you for helping me break free from binging. It still makes me like a little teary when I think about it. Oh, it was like, oh, so amazing because she had been so hopeless. She really thought there was no hope for her. And there was. So if you're listening to this or watching this and you think there's no hope for you, I'm here to tell you there is. There absolutely is hope. No matter how long that you have struggled with food, there is hope that you can change. But actually, so many people think there isn't hope. They think that binge eating is a lifelong problem. And why do they think that? Well, many of them think that binging is out of a, they're having a food problem. They think binging is related to having a food problem, an eating problem, a food addiction. They think food is the problem, which is why it seems impossible to create change. After all, if we're coping with things like cigarettes or alcohol or drugs or whatever, gambling, we can stop and we can survive. However, we can't stop eating. So that's why lots of people think, well, you know, I can't just quit eating, so I'm going to have to deal with this forever. So that belief is totally incorrect. Transformation is possible when you go about it the right way. It's just a matter of changing your mindset and finding the right path to get free from binging. So if you want to experience the kind of liberation and freedom and just relief that Kara felt 12 weeks after telling me it was hopeless, then keep watching, keep listening. Because as I said earlier, it is not what you are eating that is the real problem. It is what's eating at you. It is crucial to understand the why behind your binging. It is a lot easier to focus on food than to focus on what's eating at you. I will tell you that. But that kind of thinking will keep you in a lifelong diet binge cycle. Sorry, but it's true. Dieting cannot cure or stop binge eating. So first we have to crack the code. And here's the thing. We are not triggered by food. The real causes of binging are mainly psychological, and they lie deep within your emotions, within yourself, your soul. And these feelings can relate to unpleasant experiences in the present or childhood trauma that still is affecting you, that maybe you never addressed, or maybe you thought you addressed, but maybe you didn't really get to the root issues. But they could be something that's in the present, they could be something in the past, and they could be both. Sometimes our present implicates our experiences of our past informs what we feel in the present. So I just want to briefly, before I go more in depth of the psychological, I want to just take a moment and say something about the about dieting and recovery, right? So being in recovery, to me, suggests a never-ending process of having to think about food choices for the rest of your life, like Kara thought, like so many people think. Recovery means you're always in recovery. You're always thinking about it. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in recovery at all. No, I believe in liberation. Liberation means being set free for good. Liberation literally means being set free from oppression, from the ideas and behaviors that make binge eating feel like a prison. But you can break free. So when I think about the results I personally experienced, which led me to do this work, and what I've seen with my patients and my clinical practice and with my clients and my coaching programs, I'm here to tell you, yes, it is entirely 100% possible for anyone, no matter how long you've struggled with food. So although, yes, we got to realize ultimately binge eating is more about feelings than with food than it is about food, it can be about literal deprivation of food. If you do not eat enough during the day, you're going to get so starving that you are going to start eating and you may not be able to stop. Or if you don't let yourself eat XYZ and then you eat a little XYZ, you're going to want to eat all of it because you're going to tell yourself, oh, I blew it. I had a couple of cookies. I might as well have the whole box because starting tomorrow, I'm not going to have any more until I lose weight or stop binging or both. So yes, actual deprivation of food can make you binge, first from just sheer hunger, which is more like overeating than binging. Because if you overeat and eventually when you get full, you're going to stop. But binging, while it can be connected to food, it really has to do with the ideas that we have, the all or nothing ideas. You know, like I had two, I might as well have 20 or 40 or whatever. But I'm going to get to that in a little bit. So to achieve liberation, to totally stop having to think about food at all, recognize that if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. And when we can validate, acknowledge, reassure ourselves, comfort ourselves, soothe ourselves, encourage ourselves, really show up for ourselves, be nice instead of critical and mean and harsh and discouraging and terrible and bitchy and awful. Does that sound familiar? When we can be nice, when we can be a friend to ourselves, then we really do stop binging because we're able to cope with our feelings. We're able to cope with what's going on. That's when food doesn't even become a thought because you feel something, you feel bad, you respond to yourself, you're good. it's the difference between, you know, a friend saying to you, hey, I'm really having a hard day. And you're going, okay, what do you want? Do you want pizza? Do you want pasta? Do you want ice cream? Do you want cookies? What do you want? And which I doubt that you'd say. The difference between that and saying, you're having a hard day. Tell me about it. What's going on? Let me help. And then listening and validating and acknowledging and really showing up for your friend. Then what happens? Your friend feels better. No pizza or ice cream involved. Same with yourself. When you show up as a friend for yourself, you're going to feel good. And when you feel good, guess what? You don't need food to cope. Okay, so what do you start doing? When you start thinking about going into the kitchen or ordering DoorDash or what have you, instead of focusing on, I shouldn't have that, I shouldn't have that, I shouldn't have that, willpower, white knuckle, no, I will not have it, I'm having it. It never works. I mean, maybe it works for a day or two. Eventually, no, it doesn't work. And you don't want to wake up every day and like white knuckle it through life and think about what you're not going to eat. No. So the next time you want to go to the kitchen or order DoorDash or whatever, Uber Eats, or go out and get something from the drive-thru, ask yourself this. What's going on with me? What's eating at me? Am I upset? Is something bothering me? Am I lonely? Do I feel guilty about something? Do I feel shame? What am I really craving? What do I really want? That's not food. Am I mad? Am I sad? Am I scared? Am I lonely? What's going on with me? Get really curious. Because when you're curious, you find answers. When you're curious, you find answers. What's going on with me? Your mind wants to come up with an answer. You ask yourself a question, your mind wants to come up with an answer. Oh, maybe I'm mad at this thing that happened with my friend, but I feel bad about that. So I'm just going to be mad at myself for eating something. That's the unconscious thing that's going on, but you don't know it until you ask yourself that. So our minds want to answer the questions that we ask. But when we're critical, we just feel bad. And then we're going to want to use food to escape our own bad feeling, our own mean voice. So you don't want to do that, right? We can get so adept at coping by going to food that we don't even realize we're triggered. And the true emotions, situations, thoughts stay hidden from us. And we have no clue as to what's actually going on. And that's why I created my food mood formula, which is designed to help you know exactly what is going on with you. So if you are turning to foods like ice cream, pudding, anything with frozen yogurt, anything that's kind of smooth and creamy, that's a sign that you need comfort. So instead of comforting yourself with that kind of food, give yourself comforting words. Talk to yourself as you would a friend. If you're eating a lot of things like bread, pasta, cake, muffins, pizza, those things that take up space within us, that's associated with filling a void. So you want to look at questions about, are you lonely? Is there something missing in your life? What is the void in your life that you are symbolically filling with food? What is it? And be really curious about what that is, like a friend, not in a dismissive way, like an interested, compassionate friend. The last one is crunchy. So if you find yourself heading for the chips, tortilla chips, potato chips, crackers, anything with a crunch, that's associated with forms of anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, rage. These are all forms of anger. So don't say, hey, I'm not an angry person, because you know you're not. You're a person who's angry. And that anger needs your attention. It's so much more important to recognize what's pissing you off and express that than it is to deny that something's pissing you off and go eat a bunch of stuff and then be mad at yourself. So many people, they don't want to be mad at other people. oh no, I can't be mad at anyone else. That's mean. I don't want to be mean. Or no, I'm not mad. No, I totally understand. I'm not mad at all. No, wrong. You're mad. So instead of getting mad at yourself, which you have no problem getting mad at yourself, right? No one's like, oh, I can't be mad at myself. That's so mean. It's I can't be mad at them. That's so mean. I'm mad at me. I can't believe I ate that. So pay attention to what in your life is upsetting you, what's making you mad, angry, frustrated, irritated, annoyed, enraged, what have you, and learn how to express that. Because when you get to the root of why you're eating and then learn new ways of responding to yourself other than responding to yourself with food, binging is a way of coping. It is a way of coping. It's a way of responding to ourselves when we feel bad. It's a way of distracting, comforting, celebrating. It does feel symbolically filling, turning emotional pain to physical pain. It does so many things for us. We've got to figure out first, what is it doing for you? And when you find new ways of doing the thing that it's doing, you're free. You're totally free. So learning to identify your emotions and then express them will set you free. It will absolutely set you free. So again, I want to assure you, you are not a failure at dieting. Diets have not failed you. Diets only focus on what you are eating and not why. And that brings me to a question from a listener or someone on Instagram. I forget which. Okay, here is the question. How can I avoid the disappointment and beat down when you eat something? I personally struggle with an all or nothing approach I'm seeking out help for. When I diet, I'm great. And once I have something, I beat myself up for it. I feel like I failed and then I binged. I'm the heaviest I've ever been at the moment. I feel like, how am I going to come out of this? Oh, I feel you. Yes, it feels really bad to constantly be beating yourself up, calling yourself a failure, and all of that. So actually, the answer to her question is really what I've been talking about the whole time. If you are disappointed because you eat something, you're focusing on what you're eating. Instead of being disappointed with yourself and going, oh, I told myself I wasn't going to have that, and then I did. What's wrong with me? I suck. Well, you know how that goes. Instead of saying that, hold on, that just blew out my voice. I need a sip of tea. Hold on. Okay, that's better. So instead of saying all that, which is super mean, say, okay, why did I just eat that? What was going on with me? Remember, when you are asking yourself questions, you are going to find an answer. And by the way, if you are listening right now or watching, whether you're on Instagram or on LA Talk Radio or somewhere else, and you have a question for me, please feel free to call me 323-203-0815. If you're on Instagram, you can also just drop a question in the comment box. So instead of being disappointed and beating yourself down, beating yourself up when you eat something, be curious. What was going on with me right before I ate that? If I were not being disappointed in myself, if I wasn't mad at myself for eating that, what or who would I be disappointed in or about? What is going on with me? The other thing is, then she beats herself up. So again, if you beat yourself up and you're mad at yourself and you tell yourself mean things like, oh my God, I can't believe you ate that. You are never going to lose weight. You're always going to struggle. If people knew what you were doing with food, they would be disgusted. You've got to get over this. This is horrible. If someone said that to you, what would you want to do? Personally, I'd want to get away from that person as quickly as possible. I'd be like, see ya, bye, you're mean, I'm leaving. Well, we can't get away from ourselves, or can we? Actually, we can. That's what binging does. Binging puts you in the zone. You're not thinking, you're not feeling, you're just in a zone when you binge. Binging takes you away from yourself when you're mean. So the answer is to really fight that urge to be mean and to cultivate kindness. If you wouldn't say it to a friend, don't say it to yourself. And if you're nice to your friends, why not be a friend to yourself? Take that nice voice and turn it towards you. I know, easier said than done, but so important. Then she says she struggles with an all or nothing approach. Okay, so all or nothing approach, black or white thinking. Either I'm going to have none of those cookies or I'm going to eat all of the cookies. I was so good because I stayed in my diet, you know, stayed on my diet plan, but then I ate something and now I've ruined the whole day. The day is ruined because I ate that. You're either perfect or you're a failure. That is a really rigid, difficult place to be, all or nothing thinking. But in order to change any thinking, we need to look at where it came from. It is not enough to just say, well, you know, hey, that thinking doesn't actually make sense. That's not logical. Because this is not logical. Psychology is not logical. Psychology is psychological. If it were logical, you'd just say, okay, this is a coping strategy that doesn't work for me at all. I'm just actually feeling worse about myself instead of better, so I will stop doing it. Said no one ever. It's not logical. It's psychological. There is a reason, and it doesn't have to do with your mind or your brain. You are not some brainless being affected by sugar. This is in your mind. And we can change our minds. But first we have to look at, well, where do some of these ideas come from? So all or nothing thinking. Black and white thinking is another way of putting it. I like to say between black and white instead of shades of gray, which we can no longer say. It has a whole different connotation with that book. Now, I like to say actually they're shades of color. Shades of color in between black and white. We want to live in the color, not in the black and white. But how did you develop black and white thinking in the first place? So black and white thinking is the ultimate structure. It's either this or it's this. It's either black or it's white. It's either good or it's bad. It's either perfect or it's a failure. This kind of thinking happens when we need structure in our lives because things feel so chaotic, that's one reason. Or when we live in a highly structured world and that's how we're raised. You're either this or you're this. You're either good or you're bad. You're either success or failure. It's this or this. One of those two. You're this or you're this. One is good, two is bad. And if you're raised in a family that says, well, what do you mean you got an A minus? You failed because you should have gotten an A plus. I exaggerate, but you guys know what I mean. Or if you get the message that you're either a success or a failure, what do you mean you studied so hard and you got a B? You're a failure. Rather than, look, you did your best. You studied the hardest you could. I'm really proud of you for that. And you got a B. So, you know, let's look at maybe that's the best you can do in that class, or maybe there's room for learning some more. How can I help you? So the second example is, hey, you're not defined by your productivity. There's room for not being perfect, and there's room for learning. The first is you failed, which most people hear as you're a failure. So either you internalize that and then what was relational between you and someone who's telling you you're not good enough unless you reach this level, whether it's overtly told that or covertly told that, if that's what you're told, then that's by someone else, then that's what eventually you tell yourself. We internalize how we're treated. Great example of that is when I was at the park with my kid. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard this before. If you're new to the show, this will explain a lot. So these two little toddlers were playing in the sand. They're digging, they're eating sand, they're having a great time. And they're squealing with laughter. It was just a blissful little moment in the park. And suddenly, it was a little girl and a little boy. The boy gets up and he just runs off with the shovel. And naturally, what does the little girl do? She's 18 months old or something like that. She starts crying, because when you're 18 months old and the little dude runs off with your shovel, it's heartbreaking. And guess what? When you're 18 years old and the dude runs off, it's also heartbreaking. We've all been there. So mom comes running up. She's crying. Of course she's crying. It's terrible. Don't cry. And the kid keeps crying because she's upset. Mom's like, here, have a cookie. Ooh. Okay, it took all of my willpower in that moment not to say something. I really wanted to. I wanted to say, lady, you are teaching your child that if something happens to her and she gets upset as a result of that, and she shouldn't cry because it makes other people anxious, and instead, if she can't stop crying, she should have a cookie. Wanted to say that. I didn't. But I thought it. And one day that little girl is going to grow up and she's going to get upset when some dude leaves her or something else happens. And she's going to start crying and she's going to tell herself, don't cry. Stop. But she's not going to be able to because it hurts. It's a hurtful situation. And then what's she going to do? She's going to get a cookie or 10. She will have internalized the relationship that she was, the way that she was talked to, the way she was responded to. So the all or nothing approach that, and I'm sorry, I don't know who this is. I can't say who it is. I just took a screenshot of the question. So the all or nothing approach, first look at where did you come to learn this all or nothing approach? Where did you learn to have the idea that you're either good or bad, strong or weak, successful or a failure, and challenge that? If you could go back in time, if you can get a DeLorean time machine, totally dating myself with Back to the Future, one of my favorite movies, yes. But if you could get a DeLorean time machine and go back in time to a time when you were told that or made to feel that you were a failure because you hadn't done well enough, what would you say to the little you? Would you say, yeah, you're a failure. You suck. You little 5-year-old, you little 10-year-old, you little 14-year-old. Blech. Or would you say, hey, don't listen to them. It's not that simple. Here's another way to think about it. Well, we have an imaginary time machine. We can go back and we can remember things and kind of step into that memory with a different perspective. So that, again, that's one way that we learn the all or nothing thinking. The other way is when things are too loose, you know, like when your parents want to be your friends and smoke weed with you, when you have no curfew, when no one cares what time you come back, when, oh, you know, you want to do whatever, go for it. When things are just, no one's asking you anything. No one's saying, hey, have you done your homework? Or, hey, is that a good choice that you're making? Or let's talk about that. When things are just too nebulous or too chaotic, things are just crazy in your house and things, you know, it's chaos. It's emotional chaos. then one way of creating structure is to create that black and white thinking, because it's safe. Black and white thinking is safe. That's why all kids go through a period of time where they're very black and white around, like, you know, 5, 6 years old. I remember my other daughter, we're crossing a road. Like, there was not a car to be seen in 5 miles. She's like, "Mom, we're jaywalking. We're going to get in trouble." Black and white thinking, right? You can't, you're either crossing at the crosswalk or you're doing something, committing a crime, like, to a five-year-old. They need that because they need structure in their lives, because they come out of, you know, toddlerhood and they realize, oh, I'm going to school. There's a whole world out here. This is scary. Oh, what's happening? And they create structure. So look at your own life and figure out, where did you get that black and white thinking? Because what happened was you internalized it for whatever reason, and now you're applying it to food. And when you're good with food or bad with food, that means you feel good about yourself or you feel bad about yourself. Really? Are you going to let eating something with a carb, lasagna or pizza or ice cream or whatever, a churro, are you going to let the fact that you ate that make you feel bad about you? Really? No. Feel bad if you commit an actual crime, or you hurt a friend, or you hurt yourself. Don't feel bad because of what you eat. When you are focused less on the I'm being good or I'm being bad, and more on the why do I want to eat this? What is it doing for me? What's going on with me? Why? Not what. You're not going to feel so bad. You're going to say, oh, okay, I get it. I ate that because of this or that. I ate that because I was feeling lonely. Okay, that tells me I need to address my loneliness. What can I do about that? Binging is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem. If the problem is loneliness and you're symbolically filling up with food, then how do you resolve loneliness? Well, two ways. One is you resolve loneliness by connecting with other people. Talking to friends, making friends, joining a group, showing up, reaching out, being with someone else in a meaningful way. Because the worst loneliness of all, as I think we all know, is the loneliness that you feel in the company of others. Oof. So that's one way of resolving loneliness. But what if you're lonely and it's 2 a.m. and no one's around and the only company you have is your dog, and maybe you don't even have your dog or your cat. Maybe you have no animals. It's just you. What do? You got to convert loneliness to solitude. So loneliness is being alone with your own harsh, mean voice. Loneliness is being alone with a voice going, you have no friends, you ate too much, you're too big, you're never going to succeed, you suck, you're behind, other people are so more successful than you. You don't look good enough, they don't like you. All of those thoughts, ugh, that's the worst kind of loneliness, because you just feel terrible, and then you also feel terrible about yourself. So we want to convert that loneliness to solitude. Solitude is being alone with an encouraging part of you. Solitude sounds like, yeah, this is hard. It is hard to be alone. It is hard to feel disconnected. It's hard not to have a special someone or not to be with the people that I love or not to feel loved. It's really hard. Of course I feel this way. Of course I feel lonely. And I'm taking steps to address that. I'm taking steps to, you know, be nicer to myself. I'm going to be okay. Solitude is when you show up in an encouraging, supportive, kind way with yourself. And when you can fill up on kindness and feel better, you don't need food for that purpose. Okay. Let me see, anything more in that question? Yes, once I feel like I failed and binge. Okay. Guess what? There is a huge difference between failing and being a failure. One has to do with what you are doing. Oh, I failed to get that promotion. One has to do with who you are. I'm a failure. So one is situational, and one is about your sense of self and self-esteem. We want to change the meaning of failure. Failing doesn't mean that you're a failure. Failing means you simply didn't do it, didn't do the thing you set out to do. Where's my great quote from Michael Jordan about failure? So Michael Jordan, bear with me, Michael Jordan, because it's the best quote ever. Okay, here we go. He said, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I have failed over and over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. Fantastic quote. Awesome, Michael Jordan. Yes. Because his attitude is he's going to learn from his failures. He's going to learn from it. They're opportunities to learn something. If you don't get the job, if you don't get the promotion, if you don't get the A, if you don't get the whatever it is that you want, if you don't get accepted into this place, if you get rejected, you're not rejectable. You're not a failure. You're failure. You just didn't do the thing that you wanted to do. That does not reflect upon who you are as a person. So important to remember that. Who you are as a person is not the same as what you have done or not done when it comes to achievements. And when it comes to eating, you are not a failure because you ate carbs and you set out to not eat carbs. You're a person who ate carbs. You haven't failed if you eat the cake. Diet mentality sets you up for this all or nothing thinking. Diet mentality says, hey, we know what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. And as long as you eat what we say and not anything else, you will lose weight and then you will have the happiest life ever and you will be the best version of yourself. Well, guess what? That is not true. That is a $60 billion, actually more than $60 billion industry that thrives on making you think that if you eat this but not that, and if you lose weight, you will be the best version of yourself. You will be happier. You will have more friends. You will have the best life ever. Yeah, that's what they're selling you. How many diets have you been on? Doesn't work. Diets just focus on what you are eating. They take you away from your ability to eat intuitively, and they make you feel like a failure when you go off the diet. And then feeling like a failure makes you feel bad about yourself, which makes you turn to food because you can't accuse yourself of being a failure and feel bad about yourself and simultaneously encourage yourself and be kind. That is why the most important thing that you can do to get over, liberate yourself from binge eating is to cultivate a kind, curious, compassionate, encouraging inner voice. So if you tell yourself, okay, I'm not going to eat cake at the party, and then you eat cake, don't say, oh my God, I failed. I feel terrible. I failed. The day is ruined. Now I might as well have more cake. Say, okay, did I eat that cake just because it was dessert? Did I eat that cake because I'm telling myself I can't have it and there's only so long that I can go without eating cake? Or did I eat that cake to resolve something emotional within me? Get curious. And if it was, hey, it was someone's birthday party, and why can't I have cake? Like, that's fine. Okay, you won't feel guilty. You won't feel bad. If it's, I've been on a diet and I'm telling myself I can't eat cake, and the cake isn't very good even, but I can't have it again because I'm on a diet, and tomorrow I'm never going to eat cake again, then that's something different. So what's it all about? What's going on? And what's going on with my lighting? Okay. All right. I think that covers everything in this question. I'm the heaviest I've ever been at the moment, and I feel like, how am I going to come out of this? Okay. I know it's hard, but you got to stop focusing on what you weigh and really look at, well, what's weighing on you? Really look at cultivating a kinder way to talk to yourself, because when you stop binging, weight comes off naturally. If you're not binging, you're not going to be gaining weight. And it's not like you're either dieting or binging. You dieting leads to binging. Dieting always leads to binging or overeating. We want what we can't have. So don't diet, and talk to yourself in a nice way. All right, how are you going to come out of it? You're going to identify why you were eating and cultivate that kind voice. You're going to express what you're feeling. A lot of us mistake identifying it for expressing it. People say, well, I expressed it. I realized I was mad. No, that's not expressing it. That's identifying it. Identifying it is, oh, I realize I'm really frustrated. Expressing it is, I am so frustrated that COVID is still here and it is affecting everybody's life. And now there's another virus in China that has also jumped from animals to humans. I'm so frustrated at what is going on with viruses. Oh, it's pissing me off, right? That's expressing it. And then the next step is you gotta comfort yourself with words. That's where you wanna vary your response. My acronym that I love is, you know, stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So here, I'm super pissed at this virus stuff. It is so upsetting to see so many people sick and having to change their lives and not be able to see loved ones and, you know, having it compromise so many aspects of your life. My parents haven't left the house in 2.5 years. And my dad has an underlying condition and they can't really see friends. They can't go anywhere. It's so terrible. It's awful. When are we going to come out of this? Okay, so that's expressing it. Comforting sounds like, yeah, it is hard. Okay, notice how I'm acknowledging and validating. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to have your life put on hold and still be compromised for 2.5 years. That's tough. And, you know, doing the best you can. This won't be forever. And just one day at a time, all the platitudes, right? But what did I not do? I didn't say, it could be worse. Look on the bright side. There's a benefit. There's a silver lining, all of that. One of the things that we tend to do when we feel something is to think that we should be grateful for what we have. And it really isn't bad. And other people have it so much worse. And it could, you know, hey, at least this is a first world problem to have. Okay, it's a first world problem to have. Oh, I'm upset because I got a blowout on my tire and then I had to go and deal with it. Oh, but it's a first world problem to have and I shouldn't worry. And at least I have a car. I mean, I passed 27 homeless people, right? People say things like this all the time. No. You had a blowout in your tire. It's very upsetting to have to deal with. It messes up your day. And of course, you get to be frustrated and upset. Yeah. What happens with all of this toxic positivity, all this positive thinking and looking on the bright side and seeing the silver lining, and other people have it worse and I should be grateful. All that does is make you feel bad for feeling bad. And then if you feel bad for feeling bad, what's going to happen if you don't simultaneously have a way to comfort yourself? Hey, you feel bad. What's in the fridge? DoorDash. So to come out of it, identifying what you are, you know, what's going on with you, what's eating at you, expressing that, expressing those feelings in words and with some oomph. Notice when I was showing you what expressing frustration looks like, I was like, ugh. Right? That we feel frustrated. Why do we call them feelings? Because we feel them in our bodies. We don't think them in our heads. So you want to express yourself with feelings. So that doesn't mean, well, I'm really sad because of this or that. That doesn't mean you're supposed to break down in racking sobs, but allow yourself to feel it. Maybe you get a little teary. Maybe you do cry, or maybe you just feel it in your heart. And then you comfort yourself. That is how you liberate yourself from binge eating. Notice, none of this has to do with food. None of this has to do with, you know, counting macros or using willpower or going on a diet or even thinking about food at all. Because binge eating is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem. When you focus on food, you make it the problem and you overlook the real problem. It's like plucking a weed, just the top of the weed, and thinking you're going to get rid of it for good rather than get to the root. The only way to get rid of a weed is to get to the root of it and dig it out. The only way to stop binge eating is not to focus on food, that's plucking the weed, but to get to the root of why you are binging and not focus on that you are binging. I just have a few more minutes, so let me just get to another question. What should I do after a binge? Well, again, figure out why you binged in the first place. I look for clues and triggers that caused you to binge. Think about the events that were happening before you started binging. I can't tell you how many people have said something like this. Was watching TV and suddenly I just had to have Oreos. I was watching TV and just suddenly like Ben and Jerry's is calling my name. I was watching the TV and I don't know, I just suddenly just started thinking about pizza. Well, in each case, when we looked at what they were watching on TV, it was something triggering. And before that, you're consciously aware that you're being triggered by what you're watching on TV, you go to food. Recently, someone in my group was talking about this. I'm trying to disguise it a little bit, but basically, she had a big birthday and she's watching this show. And it's about this person her age who's dying. And she didn't realize it until after she turned to food. She stopped like mid-bite and she's like, wait a minute. What's going on with me? Why am I doing this? Okay, what was I doing? We really want to be a detective of your mind, detective of your life. What was I doing? I was watching TV. What was the show about? Oh, yeah, I totally get how that would trigger me. Often you're triggered without being aware of it. So look for clues, be a detective, and be curious, not critical. Detectives don't say, that's a weird clue. Detectives say, okay, that's interesting. Oh, I was watching TV and then I had to have ice cream. Okay, that's interesting. I wonder if those two things are connected. Maybe I'm not a food addict. Maybe something's going on with me and that's why I'm eating. So just look at, you know, was something upsetting you? Were you deprived? Instead of vowing to be good, be kind and encourage yourself and be curious. And ask yourself, hey, if I wasn't thinking about food, what would be on my mind? If I were not thinking about food right now, what would be on my mind? That is always a really good clue to help you, a question to help you find the clues. And just really, really quickly, another question, how can I help someone with binge eating? Well, I love that you're asking, first of all. So your loved one needs you to be supportive and encouraging. And they also, one way to support someone with binge eating is not talk about food. Do not be the food police. Do not ask them about food. Do not encourage them about food. Do not talk about food. Do not talk about weight. Remember, binging is not about food. Binging is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. So ask them about what they're feeling, what's going on with them. Ask them about their fears, their wishes. Ask them about themselves. Be compassionate and be that way with yourself as well. Okay. That is the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, and you can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts. And I also just want to say, look, the only thing that will help you break free and liberate yourself from binge eating for good is to really do a journey into yourself, into your soul, and change the way that you respond and relate to yourself. That is what will reach the core of the problem. That is what helps you change so that you don't ever turn to food again. That's depth psychology. That's psychoanalysis, contemporary analysis. Most people don't have access to that. That's why I wrote my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in hardcover, paperback, Kindle, and if you want me to read it to you, in audiobook. Yes, I read it. So feel free to get that, and I will see you next week. Stay curious, not critical. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.